Last time we stopped at a place where we were talking about the fact that there is a chemical basis for the control of the cell cycle. And slide 15 is by no means all of what's involved, but this gives you just a little taste of how there is a chemical basis, how actual particles can control the cell cycle. In the graph at the top, there are two things simultaneously being plotted here. One of which in the purple is cyclin concentration. Now, cyclin is a protein that's produced in cells. And the concentration's being plotted here. So notice that early on in the cell cycle, this is one cell cycle, this is another, and so on. Early on, the concentration is very low. There's almost no cyclin. And then it starts being produced somewhere in the S, as it looks like, and gradually builds up in the cell till it hits a peak. All right, that's a protein. Now the other trace, the bluish one, is MPF activity, which is how much MPF is working, obviously, but what is MPF? Well, that stands for mitogen promoting factor. In biology, we use the word factor often to describe a protein. So cyclin, I already told you, is a protein. Mitogen promoting factor is also a protein. But a mitogen is something that brings about mitosis. It causes mitosis, causes cell division, in other words. And it actually is labeled on the bottom here, MPF is right here, as really two proteins complexed together. So this light, this lavender, or this light purple, is the CDK. That is one protein, and that's another abbreviation I need to explain. CDK stands for cyclin dependent kinase. So that name should tell you that it's an enzyme, right? Actually, there are all kinds of different kinases. That's a huge category of proteins. This is just one of many kinases. But kinases as a category refer to enzymes whose job it is to phosphorylate other proteins, which could be other enzymes, because enzymes are proteins. But that's what a kinase is, something that phosphorylates something else. And that means sticks a phosphate group onto that something else. All right? This kinase is called cyclin-dependent kinase because even though it exists, it will not function as an enzyme unless cyclin, which it's dependent on, is connected to it. So cyclin is the dark purple stuff in this figure on the bottom. And there's very little of it early on in the cell cycle, but as I said on the graph, it eventually builds up. Now CDK, the enzyme that is in inactive form when it's just by itself, is there the whole time. It doesn't build up. It's there the whole time, but it's inactive because there isn't cyclin around to bind to it. Once cyclin is at a high concentration, then it will bind to cyclin-dependent kinase, and both of them combined make up mitogen-promoting factor. In other words, this cyclin activates an enzyme which will then phosphorylate something else. And if you think back to what I talked about for phosphorylation of things back when we first studied functional groups, I said that phosphorylation and dephosphorylation is a major way that cells are able to control proteins, switch them on or off. Well, if the proteins that are being switched on or off happen to be proteins that are instrumental in the activities required for cell division, if they're cell division proteins, in other words, then when they get phosphorylated by the mitogen promoting factor, which is in essence activated cyclin dependent kinase, then that will bring about mitosis. And when you go through cytokinesis, of course, that means you're starting two brand new cell cycles. And notice that early on, the cyclin gets degraded. That's why it crashes from high concentration to low. And in that new cell, when it gets through its cell, a ways long in its own cell cycle, then cyclin will start to build up again and so on. Okay, let's go to 16. This is more about chemical basis of control of the cell cycle. We have some fibroblasts, which are connective tissue cells, that, of course, are living within a tissue of an animal like you in the body, but they can also be isolated from the body and kept alive if you give them the proper nutrients, which is in the medium, the blue stuff in the dish that they're living on. And if you put those into suspension, liquid suspension, cells with a bunch of nutrients in liquid form, and then plate those out into two different dishes here, as you see, the blue one and the pink one, with different media, well, the blue one has nutrients to keep the cells alive. So they won't die, but notice that they don't proliferate. They don't create new cells. In other words, they don't divide. On the other hand, the ones that are put onto the pink medium, this has everything the blue has in it, so it has the nutrients to keep the cells alive, but it also has PDGF, which is another acronym, of course. That stands for platelet-derived growth factor. It's one of several growth factors, and notice that this is another use of that word factor to describe a protein of some sort. It's called platelet-derived growth factor simply because that's where we first discovered it, in platelets. But that's not the only place that it exists. Anyway, this is a chemical signal that tells the cell it's appropriate now to divide. So when you include the PDGF, the cells will not only remain alive, they will proceed through the M phase and proliferate, create new cells. It shows a chemical basis of the control of the cell cycle again. 17 is related, but we have two new things introduced here, one of which is anchorage dependence, the other is density-dependent inhibition. Now these cells, these pink cells, are epithelial cells. Epithelia are tissues that form linings of other things, like the skin, for instance, the outer part of the skin, the epidermis, is an epithelium, for instance. But also inner linings are epithelia. But that fact that they're linings is important. They have anchorage dependence, which means they not only have to have the right chemical signals to go through the cell cycle and split, they also have to be attached to a surface because that's the job of epithelia. So, for instance, if you just have them in suspension, you know, like in the flask in the previous slide, but you don't, they're not attached to anything, even with the right chemical signals, they won't start dividing. But you put them onto a surface, that satisfies anchorage dependence. And if you give them the right chemicals, they will divide, but only up to a point. They'll start to divide because there's plenty of space around them. When they create enough cells through cell division that all the space is filled, in other words, when the cells start touching each other, then that's what density-dependent inhibition is. Inhibition refers to turning off the cell cycle, stopping more cell divisions, because they have sensed that they've already filled up the entire layer, which is what an epithelium is supposed to do. And you can continue to demonstrate that that's being exercised by scooping some cells out, which is really intentionally injuring this epithelium, right? When you injure an epithelium, you're removing some cells in the layer. That leaves a hole, basically, just like this hole in the dish. So that turns them back on. The you know, it'll kill some cells, but the surviving cells in the area will, in essence, sense that this hole is here, turn back on cell division so that they create new cells, but only up to the point where they fill it again, and then density-dependent inhibition will turn them back off. If they lose that control, in other words, if they don't know that the hole is filled and that they should stop dividing, that's cancer. This is how cancer works. Cancer is a genetic disorder, which does not mean it's heritable. Not all genetic disorders are passed on. Genetic simply means involving genes. So it's a disorder of DNA. DNA gets changed somehow. And there's all kinds of different ways that that can happen, just accidentally by copying wrong when the many times it copies itself, by sunlight, for instance, UV radiation causes changes in the DNA, chemicals, all kinds of things can cause changes to DNA, mutations we call those. And if a mutation happens in a part of a DNA that controls or that codes indirectly for a protein that's involved in control of the cell cycle, then that protein won't operate correctly and control of the cell cycle will not work correctly. That's what cancer is, loss of control of the cell cycle. And when that happens, cells, in essence, think that they need to divide because of that defective DNA that they have. So they won't sense that they should be turned off, and they'll keep dividing, creating a mass of cells called a tumor. Cancer also features cancer. Cancer can happen anywhere in the body. It starts as a single cell. You know, each of your cells has DNA, the same library. So any individual cell, for whatever accidental reason, can undergo a mutation. And it's happening throughout your life. So you accumulate mutations in your cells as you age, which is why cancer is so much more likely in older people. Because you've had a longer time to damage your DNA that you've been living with. But anyway, it can happen in any single cell. It'll start with a single cell. Now, once the DNA gets changed by whatever the mutation is, whatever the cause of the mutation is, the cell doesn't realize that is different DNA from what it's supposed to be. It's just now going to obey the instructions in that new version of the DNA that has changed. So that's how cancer gets worse. It's a single cell at first, no big deal. But that single cell thinks that it's supposed to divide when it's not supposed to, and when it does, it will make two exact copies of itself. So each of those two new cells now is also cancerous, and they both think that they should immediately go through cell division, and now you have four cells, and then eight, it keeps doubling, it'll become a noticeable tumor eventually. And a tumor, if it's small and localized, doesn't necessarily do anything bad. It's only when it starts getting big enough that it will interfere with the healthy tissue around it. And that's when you'll start seeing loss of function in whatever organ it's in, or at least change of function. And it takes millions of cells even for a tiny tumor. So this has to go on for a while, even before you notice it. But early detection is so important because a small tumor not only gets bigger, but the bigger it gets, and therefore the more cells that it's made out of, the more likely it is that one of those cells in that tumor population will just randomly leave that tumor, get carried by fluid that moves in the body, like lymph or blood, and take up residence in some other organ and start a new tumor there. Because it's still a cancerous cell, it still thinks it's supposed to divide. And that spread to other organs is called metastasis. That's the process. We say that the cancer has metastasized when it goes to other organ systems. And the more that happens, the more difficult it becomes then to treat, which is why you want to catch cancer when it's just a tiny tumor. Because The smaller it is, of course, the easier it is to get rid of every one of those defective cells. And it's not to say that cancer can't happen again in any one of your other healthy cells, but once you get rid of all the defective ones, it's going to take another mutation randomly for it to happen again. All right, that is that chapter.